Welcome to Living Your Soul's Journey with Dr. Vicki. I am so grateful to be here with you tonight. We discuss issues to help you walk your soul's pilgrimage in your own authentic way. Sharing the path with your angels and spiritual guides gives you the comfort and security of always knowing you are not alone. You are invited to visit my website at livingyoursoulsjourney.com and fill out the Freedom to Be Me journal, a place of self-discovery. The show airs every Sunday night on BBS Radio at 4 Pacific, 7 Eastern. Call in or just listen during our inspirational discussions from guests around the world and from Dr. Vicki, a counselor of law and spirituality. And now, Living Your Soul's Journey. Welcome this evening. It is such a pleasure to be with each and every one of you. I am excited tonight because I made it through the day, so I'm grateful for that. And I have the second of 5-week series with Richard Andrew King this evening. And I want to talk, before I introduce him, we're going to be discussing parenting wisdom, what to teach the children. And it also is, there's a companion book entitled Parenting Wisdom for the 21st Century, which I want to bring y'all's attention to this because you really need to get the book. I mean, we talk a lot about what's in the book, but to really gather it and own it, you really need to buy those books on Amazon, or we can talk to Richard about where to get those books. So Richard Andrew King is a father, a grandfather, and he's a professional educator, having been to school for that, as well as a martial arts instructor. So he's taken all of this information that he has and has put it into this incredible book called Parenting Wisdom to help you learn and to apply wisdom, knowledge, and information on how to raise children. It could be your grandchildren as well. And so I welcome you this evening, Richard. How are you?
Dr. Vicki, thank you. Great to be here as always. I appreciate you having me on.
Yes. Well, I'm excited about this evening. I have to tell you that I'm sitting in the North Georgia mountains. Can't see the deer anymore because it's turned dark, but I went and bought my boyfriend jeans today. And I'm sitting here. They're the most comfortable. You guys have the most comfortable clothes. But anyway, I didn't buy the boyfriend. I bought the jeans. And so I am just sitting here relaxed and just happy to have survived today because I just had a very unusual day. So, wow. How are things in California?
Warm and sunny and beautiful, as usual.
Oh, wow. Yeah, well, that's excellent. We are starting to get some warmth here in the Georgia mountains, so that's extremely good. So tonight, I know that we talked last month, about, you know, the needs of children, but tonight we're going to talk about the boundaries and rules and regulations and a couple other chapters on helping parents and grandparents to live more comfortably with their children. So what are some thoughts on all of this?
Well, yes, we're going to talk about the next 5 principles that I write about in Parenting Wisdom, What to Teach the Children. After boundaries, rules, and regs, which we'll talk first about, then there's competence creates confidence, very important. Do the right thing because it's the right thing to do. Don't dummy down your children, and then don't rush in. Those are the principles that we have on the schedule for today, if we can get through them. So,
yeah, I think we can. So, I think boundaries, and I will tell you, Richard, that as a child, I don't know that I ever had boundaries. My parents violated my boundaries. And I never really learned about boundaries. It was probably, and has remained, one of the most difficult aspects of my life. I'm now getting it, but it's been a long, long journey for me. So I'm really, you know, I love reading about this, and it's been fabulous teaching my own daughter about boundaries.
Boundaries are really, really critical. And one of the advantages I've had in my life, other than being a parent, which is a wonderful thing to be. I've also been a martial art teacher for close to 49 years. And actually, on your birthday, the 15th of March, it'll be 49 years for me in martial arts. And so I've had the chance to work with thousands of children, which has been the basis of not only this book, but also the Black Belt Book of Life, in which I explain very similar principles in a martial art capacity. But one of the things that we need to understand about raising children is that kids need boundaries. They need rules to live by and regulations to follow. Children, really, in my opinion, are neither mature enough, old enough, experienced enough, or wise enough to know what's good for them. That's why there are parents. That's why we exist. And I feel strongly that it's our job to establish the restrictive lines of behavior which will protect our children from conduct and actions that could jeopardize their ability to live a full, meaningful, substantive life. I think we really have no choice. When I was in grad school getting my secondary teaching degree, I did a study on self-esteem in children. The findings were very stark, and they were simply these. Children who grow up with boundaries have a higher sense of self-esteem and self-confidence than children who grow up without boundaries, because all children need them. It's very obvious when you teach martial arts. They love to have boundaries. They need to know what they can do and what they cannot do. And so we need to provide those for them as parents.
Well, I'll have to tell you, that is something that I went through this week with my daughter, because she wanted to get on some of the social media. And we talked about it and went through it. And to me, that is something that I feel is extremely dangerous. And she was commenting, and I'd love to hear what you say about this. She was commenting that I have too much fear. She said, you know, you've got to trust me more, and you've got to know that I will know if the person is good or not. And I said, well, I do trust you very, very much, but I also, as an attorney, have seen that this 16-year-old person that you're speaking with could be a 30-year-old pedophile from gosh knows where. So, you know, we really got into it this week. We worked through it. But she said, you know, you've got too much fear. You can't let the fear control you. And I said, no, this isn't fear. This is discernment. So what are your thoughts on that?
The first thing is, we don't drive the wrong way down the highway, right? Because we have fear. Fear can be a good thing. But I would also say this, having taught all of these children throughout the years, and my own children, young teenagers particularly think they have all the answers to everything. And they don't. As I said in my opening, children are neither mature enough, old enough, or experienced enough, or wise enough to know necessarily what's good for them. This day and age, even though Phoenix is very smart, she still has not the experience behind her to understand that there are evil people in the world, there are predators in the world. And children become, when they become too socially involved, they can do things that can cripple their entire lives for the rest of their lives.
I understand. And so, I bring that up because I know there are a lot of parents out there that just don't know what to say to their kids. And we just flat out, I just said, no, I can't. I said, you know, I can't live with myself if something happened to you. And I said, you can call it fear if you want. That's fine with me. But it's a fear that I'm going to continue to have. And if you want to call it that, that's fine, but I don't call it that. Go ahead.
There's nothing wrong with fear. My gosh, look at all the things we don't do because of a righteous sense of fear. Mm-hmm. Fear, you don't run. Like I said, you don't drive the wrong way down the highway for fear of getting killed. Kids usually do not understand what they're getting into. And I have had, unfortunately, quite a few children die. Not my own children, but students I've taught, because they thought they were all that. They thought they didn't have to be afraid. They didn't have to think. They ended up maybe doing drugs or driving too fast down the road or getting involved with the wrong people, and they ended up getting killed. And they're just too young. And I would lay down the law with my kids. Here's the deal. Parents must be leaders. We're not buddies with our children. This is not a negotiated deal. when children say, well, I want to do this, yes, there can be a little negotiation, but the bottom line is, and I've taught this to all my students, adults or children, and my own children, if I'm in charge of you, I'm the boss and you're not, and it's never going to change. I'm going to use my experience, my wisdom, and my clout to set down the rules. If you, when you become an adult, think you want to do differently, then that's fine. You can do that. Mm-hmm. But right now, I'm calling the shots and it's not going to happen. And that's just too bad for a lot of teenagers. Now, think about this. Teenagers, from the time they are 10 through the age of 19, and I mentioned this in several of my books, the first number that begins the teenage years is the number one. It begins at the age of 10. Then you go to 11, 1 and 1. You go to 12, 1 and 2. So that whole teen period is established first by the ego, the self, going through different vibrational states. So the self at the one goes through the gestation period as a 10-year-old. And then at age 11, they start going thinking about other ones, other people. And it goes all the way through to the age of 19. And we know scientifically that children's frontal cortex does not develop fully until they are in their mid to late 20s. But I have never seen a teenager not think that they have the answers. And when it comes to that, the adult has got to take the upper road, the high road, the strong road, and make the decision. That's why you have generals in the military. That's why you have CEOs and people in charge. I am of the belief children are still developing. It's my job as a parent, as a teacher, to help them do the right thing and not to put them in any danger. And being on the web at a teenage age can be very dangerous indeed. I wouldn't let my kids, if they were that age, get on there.
Well, she doesn't. She doesn't do it, but she sure did feel like it was a solution to her problem. You know,
that's okay. But that's why you're the leader. That's why you're the parent. Yeah. Think of a garden. So often, well, let me back up. Mm-hmm. One day I had a student come into class. His mother was right behind him, and he walked in the front door, and he turned around and he told his mother, "Shut up." Just like that. I grabbed that young man and I said, "Don't you ever talk to your mother like that in my studio again. Now you get your butt," and that's how I told him, "right into that studio and I'll be with you in a couple minutes." Now I knew there was a huge risk that that mother was going to say, "How dare you speak to my child that way?" But as soon as I released him, I turned to her and she said, "Thank you so much, Mr. King. I don't know what to do. My husband and I don't know how to raise him, and I appreciate what you're doing," because he was getting the discipline from me. And this is a highly educated woman. She had a PhD in education. Her husband had a master's degree. But it's very simple to raise children, and sometimes the intellect gets too involved. And so I went in and I had a talk with him, and I said, "You know, if you were my son, I'd turn you over my knee and give you a spanking." And he stood upright and he turned his head to the side and he said, "My parents never spank me. They just don't give me my allowance for the week." You see, the parents in her case tried to negotiate with children. Get back to basics. Watch, if you've ever been around horses, watch how mares treat their young. They are not easy on them. And if a foal gets out of hand, that mare will put that child, that horse, that young baby horse, in its place. She will kick him, she will bite him, she will set him straight. In our culture, discipline and boundaries have become, to some people, a bad thing. This is absolutely not right. You need boundaries, you need rules, you need to understand how to deal in a social situation. So I'm all for boundaries, rules, and regulations. In my work as a martial arts instructor, I tell all of my students, adults and kids alike, these are the rules. You may stay inside them. If you go outside them, we're going to butt heads. And my rules are firm, but they're fair. No cussing, no running down other people, no hurting people unnecessarily, and that sort of thing. And it works really well. Then you have control. If you don't get control, then your kids or your students are going to overrun you, and they're going to take charge. One of the things I do, as far as boundaries go, is I never let a child speak to me on a first name basis. It's always Mr. King. It is never Rich or Richard. Now, if they get older and we have an adult relationship, that may be different. but not as children, because you have to teach children respect. You have to teach them that there's a line that cannot be crossed. That is a boundary. And if they break that boundary, there are going to be problems. But then when I speak to the kids, I would also speak to them sometimes in their last name or with a call sign. Certainly with adults, I would never use a double standard. I was always use their last name if they're giving me the respect of using my last name. I think that's important to show that you do not have a double standard or live by a double standard.
That's good. Now, is there anything else that you want to discuss? Because boundaries to me is one of the biggest, you know, as far as rules and regulations, it's just powerful. Because what's happening, Rich, I don't know if you know this, because I don't know how it is in California and I don't know how it is in other states, but in the state of Georgia, as a child advocate and an attorney for children and their parents for over 10 years, I represented some children, not many, but some children who would get very angry at their parents for whatever, you know, when the boundaries were put in or regulations were put in, and they would call the Department of Family and Children's Services on their parents. And the children, the department would come in and take these children, put them in foster parent homes, and I would represent some of them. Occasionally, I would represent the parents. But what I found happened was that as they realized, oh my, and I know we're going to get into this in a minute on the third chapter, but oh my goodness, what have I done? Because now they're in foster homes, and their parents have to go through months of going through all of this rigorous program to get their children back. And they come to me as their, you know, advocate and said, you know, we really didn't mean to do that. We just got mad at our parents. And I said, well, look what's happened. And I don't know that happens in California, but it certainly does in the state of Georgia. It's happened. I can think of five times of kids that I've represented that happened with. And I represented them after they were already in foster parent, you know, care. And I tried to get them back home. And eventually, of course, they did go home. But, you know, when they say those things, the teachers and the school systems in Georgia have to report it.
So. Well, this is a government out of control. This is too much power put in the hands of people who think that they know what they're doing. For example, out here in California, and I talked to this woman, she was a lawyer. Her son was late for class, and she said, you need to get up and make sure you catch the bus because I'm not driving you to school. He stayed in bed. He missed the bus. She did what every parent would do, and I would do the same thing. She said, okay, you're walking. I'm not taking you. I told you. So he had to walk to school. He got to school. He walked right in the principal's office and filed a criminal complaint against his parents for abuse. And if I were the principal, I would say, you kidding? You get your butt into class. I'm not doing it. But this is what our society has become. That woman was right to do exactly what she did, and I would have made my children do the same thing. That's just like a mare kicking its child, its horse. Now, horses can handle that. I don't believe in hitting children. But in the horse world, they get away with it because that's just how they do things. They can't communicate any other way, or they bite them. But that is what happened. Think of a garden. If you plant a garden and you never prune the bushes or the flowers or trim the grass or anything like that, that garden is going to run amok, and pretty soon it's going to be a weed garden. It's going to be ugly. It's going to be you have to rip the whole thing out and start over again. Children need discipline. They need pruning. They need those boundaries, rules, and regs. Now, in that case, I never had that problem with my children, and I'll tell you where it starts. It starts right out of the womb, especially at age 2 when children start to test. Because now they become aware of other people. And every child I have ever taught or had has always tested me. And the parents have got to know they're going to be tested. And it's whoever wins early on is going to set the boundaries. And if a parent lets a child keep getting away with something, oh, don't do that, don't do it, and then they let the child get away with it, now the child knows it can control the parents. That's why that boy told his mother to shut up. If when that child was growing up, the father and the mother had put a damper on that and said, you will never speak like that to me again, then that would never have happened. But they let it get out of hand. They didn't control them. They believed that somehow in this new age that discipline is a bad thing to have, which is crazy. As Pythagoras said, no man is free who cannot control himself. We as parents must teach our children to learn how to control themselves. That's the difference between animals and children. Children can think, they can learn to control themselves, and it's our job, it's our sacred duty to teach that to our children. Otherwise, we are crippling them. Look what's happening to our society today. You get the message from the top down from this government for these kids to go out and like that the gal in Baltimore who told the cops to just let the people riot, just let the kids destroy. Those were her words, I believe. Are you kidding me? What kind of message is that telling children that you can go destroy? And this is that whole mindset that is becoming a cancer, as far as I'm concerned, to our society. And you can see it with that young lady from Yale University several months ago at Halloween, who was complaining and throwing a temper tantrum and swearing at the professor because somebody had a Halloween costume that offended her and she couldn't handle it. That is absolutely absurd to me. You remember that?
Yes.
So she did not grow up with boundaries. She grew up with parents who pampered her too much, who never told her no, who tried to probably negotiate her or gave her everything she ever wanted in life. No, no, no. Discipline is a crux of success. And if you don't have it, and if you're not teaching as a parent, you're crippling your children, and we're crippling our young children coming up because they have no clue what's going on, and it's up to us to give it to them. So I could go on forever on this issue. But
I understand. And I also want to share something with our listeners, too. And a lot of times, if you did not listen to the show, it's on the archives under Living Your Soul's Journey. You can look under Richard Andrew King, and you'll find that archive. When you buy the book, Parenting Wisdom, and I would recommend buying Parenting Wisdom in the 21st century as well. I know that we're briefly going over all of this, but there are steps that you give everyone, Richard, to help them to learn how to do this. And it's really imperative that folks learn it, especially new parents. Oh, my goodness. Wouldn't this be wonderful if you could get the doctors of the world to give this to parents when they're just adopted or had their birth child? This would be so neat. Be really good marketing program.
Can I? I have in this chapter on boundaries, rules, and regs.
Yes.
At the end of that chapter, I give 21 other rules that I use. For example, I'll share a couple with you. I did this with my grandchildren, mm-hmm. and I also do it with my children, any child. The rule, if you make a mess, you clean it up. It's not my mess. It's not your mother's mess. It's your mess. And nothing's happening until you clean up that mess. Why? Because it's your mess. It's your life. It's your responsibility. That needs to be done. And if you don't do it, then you're going to get restricted or whatever. But you have to hold your ground. You don't say, well, clean up your mess and walk away and don't let the child do that. You must hold firm to that boundary. Here's another one. No whining. I don't allow whining in my martial art class or with my children. Why? Because whining is unbecoming. It weakens people. It makes them feel like a victim. Life, if we want our children to be happy, we have to help make them strong. Allowing them to whine and cry all the time is not. That is weakening our children. Here's another word, one of my favorites. If you give your word, you keep it. You don't give somebody your word and break it. That's a rule. Another one, you tell the truth, even if it hurts. And even if it costs you money, once you give your word, you promise somebody something, you keep it. These are just the boundaries. I have there are another 21 of those in that chapter. I know we have lots to talk about.
Yes.
But as a martial art instructor and as a dad now, and I'm almost 70 as a grandfather, boundaries are critical to a child's well-being. And if we want to help them, we must give them boundaries, rules, and regulations so they can form a good, strong image of themselves. Not unreasonable rules. Just good, strong rules.
I totally understand. And by the way, thinking of martial arts, I just remembered. The first one's a white belt, and the second one's a yellow belt.
Well, there are many different systems of martial arts. Oh. You've got Chinese systems, Korean systems, Okinawan systems. The white belt is usually in the old days. The white belt was what everybody wore, and it just got old and dirty and black, and that's how it became a black belt. But when it came to America, then Americans need symbols of progression. So that's when the color belt system was instituted, and every color belt system is different. Usually white is beginner and black is considered an expert. But I've known 8-year-old kids to have 10 ranks of black belt on their systems because martial arts, some martial arts schools will just sell you whatever you want, and it's become, that's another bone of contention in my world. It doesn't happen in my world, but in the martial art world, people are usually can buy belts rather than really earn them. But we can talk about that another time.
Yeah, I was just going to tell you, I was a yellow belt a long time ago. Anyway, which isn't much, but it was fun. Now, I want to move on to the next chapter, which is called Competence Creates Confidence.
And absolutely.
Oh, boy, do I have a lot to talk about with that. But I want you to begin it and talk to us about how you created this chapter.
Well, from direct experience, you know, I've taught thousands of children and thousands of adults. And in that course of going from white belt to black belt, the average was about every 6 months to a new belt. So that's basically eight ranks to black belt. One doesn't get to have true confidence. And confidence is the number one quality that all parents and children tell me that they have gained from their martial art experience. I'll ask them, what's the number one thing? Confidence. But here's how it's created. First I'll tell you how it's not created. Confidence in children is not created by patting a child on the head constantly, kissing him on the cheek, putting your arm around him and hugging them and telling them they're great, you can never do wrong. Because as soon as a child learns or fails at something or learns he's not all that great, he's going to distrust you and he's not going to feel confident because he was told some things that were not true, some over-exaggerated statements. The way to create confidence in people is to make them competent. You make them, for example, in all my tests, I would take a brand new student. They have to go through the white belt curriculum to get to orange belt. My tests have always been very demanding, but when they earn that belt, which I never give them, they will earn it through hard work and discipline and right behavior. They will know that they earned it, and by earning it, they will have competence. If you tell somebody, oh, you're a great fighter, for example, you're great, and they go out in the street and they get their butt kicked because they weren't competent, they're going to lose their confidence right away. And there are too many people walking around believing they have confidence, but it's really false. We gain competence by going through the fires of life, by learning lessons. That's why we don't want to do too much for our children. We want to help them do for themselves so they learn that this is their life. It's their responsibility, and they will be competent then by the time they get to their teenage years and hopefully into their parental years by knowing that they can do it because they were taught how to do it. They weren't all ushered in like this, going back to this girl at Yale. She was never taught to have confidence. She was taught to be, her parents protected her. She gets to a college, and all of a sudden, somebody has a costume that bothers her. She's offended by it, and she's screaming for a safe zone. This is a weak person, and we see these kinds of safe zones arising all over campuses across the country because these children grew up not having been taught respect, not having been taught self-control, not having been taught anything to do with being a competent, whole individual. I mean, my God, if you get upset because of a Halloween costume or because somebody says boo to you and you want a safe zone, my God, you need to go back to age 5 or 4 even and have that taken care of, because that is an immature adolescent outlook on life. And when we have that as an adult, so to speak, in an adult body, we're in deep trouble. Words should never hurt you. We've talked about that before. They're just words. Okay, I'll be quiet.
No, it's so true. And I will say this, you just finished saying something. Words should not bother you. Competence. If you're a competent person and this is what's bothering me about the way kids are being raised. So many of them are going to school and then they come home and they spend their days doing homework or their nights doing homework. Their days were in school. And by the time they get out, I mean, they know how to make good grades, but they're not learning. Now, this is a generality, but a lot of them are not learning competence. All they're learning is drama. And not drama as in theater, but drama as in boyfriend, girlfriend kind of drama. And the confidence is just, I don't know. I mean, I take a little different approach with my daughter because I'm teaching, like she's taking dance and she's getting into theater. And she's doing more than just schoolwork. She's doing that also. But she's getting out there, and I told her, you'll love this because you've done her chart. she's doesn't know the steps real well. And I told her, I said, you know, you can't learn the dance routine if you don't know the steps. And none of the kids do. And so I wrote to her teacher and I said, you know, the basics have got to be put in here before. It's like you're trying to teach martial arts but not have the basics. I mean, they've got to know each step.
It's like trying to teach physics to a kindergartner.
Yes. So I told her, I said, you know, to my daughter, I said, you need to learn the steps. And once you know the steps, putting them in a routine is just like mixing up 1, 3, and 4 and 1, 5, and 6. It's simple, but you've got to know those basics. So I'm taking a different approach because the competence, she's not going to have confidence because
no,
she's not.
That's correct.
She doesn't feel competent in her dance routines. Because she can't, well, she can't learn them because she doesn't know the basics. So I'm writing, I mean, I wrote to the lady and she didn't respond. So tomorrow, Tuesday, when I take her to her dance class, I'm going to ask to do a few private lessons so that she can get the basics down.
But she should be learning those basics in class. That's what the teachers are for. You always start at basics.
Right.
You never
right.
jump ship and go to a third level summit. Is something or other until you learn the basics. Everything has to start at the ground floor. A child learns to crawl before it learns to walk, and then it can learn to run, but you don't teach the child to sprint when it can't even get up on its knees. And there's a lot of that in educating our young, which I think is absolutely wrong. The thing is, all of us, including our children, must learn to manage our own problems and solve them. We can only gain confidence when we solve the problems of life through our own competence. We can't solve those problems if somebody's patted us back and told us we're great and we think we're terrific, and then we get out in the real world and we find, oh my God, what do I do? I don't even know how to write a check. I don't know how to discipline myself. I don't know how to spend my money. I was never taught how to do that. I don't know how to clean up my room. I remember going to, this is decades ago, I was at my bank. And there was a new teller there, and I got to talking to her just briefly, and she said that, now she was in her early 20s, she had never made her bed a day in her life. She came from a privileged family. I'm thinking, what? And she was lost. She didn't know how to make a bed. But this is, so she wasn't competent in that. All of these things are going to carry over. But the truth is, competence creates confidence. Loves and kisses and hugs are great, but they're not going to create it. Show me somebody who has competence and they will automatically have confidence in what they do.
Well, I can think of somebody right now, but I'm not going to get into politics. But someone who's very confident and the world is loving him right now, too, because of it, because he's very, very, very confident. So, but I just want to just reiterate then, because this chapter is called Competence Creates Confidence.
That's right.
And it is so, so key. We do love, you know, like you just said, we need to love our children, but we've also got to, you know, and there's going to be something else that comes up in this next chapter, do the right thing because it's the right thing to do. That is a very powerful statement right there. Before I go on, was there anything else you wanted to comment on the competence and the confidence?
Competence? No, we just have to make sure that that's the focus as parents, as teachers. Make them competent. Don't worry about, you know, we think that we can, our children, we want them to be strong and secure and whole. So we love them, we kiss them, we try to make them feel secure, and they do. But then we don't make them competent. For example, well, we'll talk about it in a little bit in another one of the other chapters. But and don't rush in. It goes to the very thing. But the bottom line is, if we make our children competent, they will automatically have confidence. We don't have to necessarily always be on hovering around them, being helicopter moms and dads, which actually cripples people. It doesn't help them to learn how to deal with life on their own. As if we want to make our kids have a good life, we have to teach them as children. Because once they get to be adults, if we're not there, they're going to have to live their life and make decisions that can, one mistake could ruin your whole life. So we want to try to teach them well. Teach them to be competent. They'll be confident then. All right.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. So do the right thing because it's the right thing to do.
That's
Whoa.
Right.
Wow.
That's right. And I would teach this, I would always give these lectures to my, well, to my kids, of course, but to my martial art classes. All these I would teach all kids, because I believe as a teacher, it's my sacred duty to make them strong and whole, not to make them weak. And we see tons of policies in today's culture making our children weak. And we can talk about that forever. But anyway, do the right thing. We all know intrinsically what the right thing to do is. But here's the deal. I have never known a child, when given a choice between the wise and right thing to do, the hard thing to do, and the easy choice, to make the wise choice. They will always take the easy way out. But they know intrinsically what the right thing to do is. And it's not the right thing just because, and this is important, I never gave my children money for making grades. Now, people have done that. If they want to do that, that's fine. I didn't. And my theory is, this is your life. It's your responsibility. You should do the right thing because it is the right thing to do. Because one day you're going to be on your own and you're not necessarily going to be given a prize every time you do something. So do it. And do it the right way the first time. Do the right thing because it's the right thing to do. You know what? Here's the deal. Whenever we ask ourselves a question, we always know the answer. But our selfish motives, desires, and so forth get in the way, and we try to start gaming the system and do maybe something we shouldn't be doing. There's that still small voice. And I don't know about anyone else that's listening, but I've learned the hard way to listen to that voice that says, oh, don't do this, don't do this. And I've got against it. I will intellectually argue against it. And every time, 100% of the time, I learned that that voice was correct. I was wrong, and I've had to pay a price, maybe a light price, sometimes a heavy price, nonetheless a price. So you teach the kids, do the right thing. What's the right thing? You know what the right thing is. Go inside yourself and act on that.
That's powerful. That's a very, very powerful statement, because you're not telling them what to do. You're telling them to go within, and they always know. That is so wise.
And they'll figure it out. That's what, yeah. I mean, they all know. They just want to be given the right by somebody in power. You know, in our society, if enough people do something, then other people think that's the right thing to do. But there are some things that are just correct, regardless if the whole world is against you. And I truly believe that. You do the right thing. You have to have courage to do the right thing. Sometimes it's easier to do the popular thing, but not the right thing. The right thing takes courage to stand up and be who you are. And when that is done, you will gain strength, and furthermore, you will gain more competence as a human being. You'll know you are internally strong because you've solved that problem yourself. Because we can't solve our children's problems forever. We have to teach them how to solve those problems by themselves.
Well, it brings up a very modern issue that's happening with parents around the country, Rich, and I've talked to many of them around the country, is that when a child learns differently, okay? And there are many children, by the way, that learn differently than the typical way. Left brain, they learn, you know, you can put them in a classroom of 30 and they'll just learn great. But as a parent, doing the right thing because it's the right thing to do, it's very difficult sometimes, because I personally, and I have to use personal experiences because that's what's real to me, but I have personally seen for myself people criticize me for not putting my daughter into public school. And I intuitively, and she's, you know, she knows that that's not right for her as well. But intuitively, I knew that it was the wrong thing to do for her. And I even had her tested. And they said, no, do not do that. Oh my gosh, don't do that. But I have been very heavily criticized for not putting her into this system of public schools here in Georgia. And I said, no, I'm not going to do it. And there are a lot of parents that have children that are a bit autistic, learn differently, maybe a lot more right-brained than the average person would be. And they don't have choices. They don't have a choice. They have to put their child, and they struggle. They call me for legal advice, and I don't have expertise in that area. I know what to do and where to send them, but I, you know, it's doing the right thing because it's the right thing to do is sometimes the hardest thing you'll ever do. but you just do it.
It's very difficult because the right thing takes courage, and it's always a higher expression of life than doing the wrong thing. The wrong thing is usually the easy thing. For example, a child, I tell kids, you're going to go to, when you start in junior high school, and by God, by the time you get in high school, you're going to have kids telling you to, oh, hey, you can smoke this joint. You can, hey, come to a party. We're going to have a beer there and things like that. I've even known parents who, for example, I had a stepdaughter and she was going to a party. I said, are there going to be parents there chaperoning? Oh, yeah, Dad, there are going to be parents there. So I went there and I said, I'd like to meet the parents. So I met one of the parents and I said, are you going to be here tonight? Oh, yeah, we're going to be here. What they did, and I found out, is they locked themselves in a room upstairs and they let their kids have the run of the place downstairs. To me, that's really wrong. And these are parents that are trying to be hip and cool. And it's, to me, it's lethal. Now, far be it for me to tell parents how to, whether they want to use public school or private school. I have some thoughts. My kids went to public school because I wanted them to have the socialization skills and to learn how to deal with all types of people, which they can't always learn if they're being taught, if they're being homeschooled. Now, homeschooling can definitely have advantages, and everybody has their destiny. So if that's the destiny, so be it. But that's kind of my stance on that. And then, though, I would also, as a teacher, help my kids, as their mother would help them, develop and grow at home to make sure they got their work done. Today, kids aren't being educated well. They're getting too many. They're not learning well. They're not learning grammar. I cannot tell you how many reporters I will see on TV who can't even get subject-verb agreement right. I don't know what they're being taught, but this is third-grade grammar. And it's where our educational system has evolved, unfortunately. Not all teachers are like that. But if I hear one more child say, well, me and him are going to the store, or her, me, I want to scream. So if any of you teachers are out there listening, if you're an English teacher and you're the principal, or you're the president of a university and you've got your students speaking like that, you need to make some adjustments because that's not correct. And I see it in emails all the time.
Well, you know, at this point, because I talk to a lot of teachers, I do a lot of closings, but I also talk to a lot of teachers. Did you know that they're not allowed in Georgia to have a dictionary in the classroom? They can't look up words. Let me put it that way.
Why? See, this is absurd.
Yep. Yes. I asked them, I said, you know, because when I'm involved with a young person and they don't, you know, they talk about something, and I said, well, what does that mean? Well, I don't know. And I said, well, how do you find out what something means? Oh, I don't know. And I said, well, well, we're going to look it up. And we don't have to look it up in the dictionary if you don't want to, but we're going to Google it at least. The problem with Googling is it doesn't give you the derivation. And I don't know. Now, this is just a personal issue, but when I learn a word, the definitions of words, of a word, I have to go back to the derivation to really get the full understanding of, wow, that's where that word came from.
Some sites do have derivations.
Oh, they do? Okay, good. And so, you know, it slows down the reading process, but not really. I mean, it appears to slow down the reading process, but it's amazing. But anyway, I know that's the right thing to do. So I, you know, we all have our different ways of what is right and what is wrong. But like you say, you have your children go through the intuition issue. I think that's probably the biggest aspect of what we've talked about, to, you know, find it within themselves so that they self-empower. So don't dummy down. Okay. Don't dummy down.
And this okay. So here's what we're doing. We're talking about it right now. And this is another burr under my hide when I see what our culture is doing. For example, not having a dictionary in the classroom. I'm sitting here shaking my head going, who are the people that are making these decisions and doing this? Do you know that there's a direct correlation between somebody's vocabulary and their success in life? And if you don't understand the language, you're going to be easily controlled. In our culture, we are dummying down the bar is getting to be so low in our society, you'd have to dig a hole 6 feet under the ground just to get under the bar. Everybody's trying to make everybody equal, everybody the same. This is absolute, utter nonsense. It's a true story. one of my best fighters, actually, at one time in my history, he was the best fighter in my studio. He was a brown belt at the time. And he came into me, says, Mr. King, can I talk to you in the office? I said, yes. So he came into the office and he said, I'm the best fighter in the studio. He wasn't being egotistical. That was just a fact. And he said, what should I do? I feel like I should start losing. Should I start losing? He said. And I said, absolutely not. You do not take away from the gifts God gave you just because somebody's feelings may be hurt because they didn't win. You keep winning and you force them to either get better or stay where they are. But how can somebody else improve if you dummy yourself down? You're going to dummy them down too. Our culture never rises when we sit there and dummy people down and worry about their feelings more than their competence. And that's what's happening all across our world. Everybody's trying to, all these, the influences from many, many people, thousands, teachers, people in top educational positions, which I think is a shame to our country, trying to make people the same. Oh, don't do this because you'll hurt people's feelings. No. How many times do people get participation trophies, but when they should be getting excellence trophies? You don't teach somebody to be excellent by giving everybody a trophy and making everybody equal. But you must not dummy down. You just do the opposite. You make somebody as good as they can be. And that's the parent's job, because if you rely on the social structure of our culture now, which is, by the way, we're in the environment. Now I'm going to start talking numerology, not parenting. We're in the second millennium. This is all about the two energy, which is all about dependence. And you can see children being made to be dependent and not to stand apart. But the very thing about each of us is that each of us is drastically different from somebody else. Yes, we have the same body parts. We're still human and so on and so forth. But to dump somebody down is a violation of a parent's sacred duty. It's a violation of teachers and professors and everybody else who's trying to tell everybody, be like everybody else. Don't hurt their feelings. As you can tell, I'm not a feelings guy. Because if, as a martial art instructor, I said, oh, no, I'm going to pass you just because I don't want to hurt your feelings and we're going to give you a belt too. No, that's going to cripple that child. If that child wants it, say a next level up, a degree, that child must work for it and they must work hard for it. And when they get it, they will go, man, I'm on top of the world. That's why you never see people at the top of the mountain in this culture. People don't want to climb and be different. And you see people from the bottom trying to pull them down. Big symbols make big targets. And whenever somebody succeeds, there's going to be somebody trying to pull them down. And unfortunately, too many people in authority in our culture now are doing that very thing to people who are trying to succeed. They're telling them, they're dumbing down these people, just like not having dictionaries in a classroom. That is absolutely a violation of a teacher's ethics, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, I mean, but you have to understand, if the teacher gets in trouble for it, I mean, you don't have to understand, but these teachers are told that they cannot do that. So it's like I asked them, I said, how do you teach then? How can you teach a child if you do not teach them what the word means? I mean, it doesn't make sense.
What is their justification? I would go to the principal, whomever is making that decision, and your justification for not having a dictionary? This is absurd. And I would start hitting them. Here's the thing always to remember. General George Patton had it right. In warfare, the only true defense is offense. And too often we're being passive. We're not taking charge of the situation. I would start talking to that principal. Where did you get your degree? How do you justify what you're doing? Don't you know about language? And I would start hitting him on all these facts about language and how powerful it is in our society. And why in God's name, creation, are you not allowing a dictionary in class? Are you nuts? And that's exactly how I would talk to these people. You need to.
They're not even allowing them to do cursive anymore. All the children in Georgia, at least, are only allowed to print.
This, to me, I'm not a conspiracy guy necessarily, but you can sure see how this is dumbing down our culture.
Yeah. But, I mean, I have worked with I'm going to make up a number, but it feels right, probably 200 or 300 children. I'm not talking about my own, but 200 or 300 children that have told me the same thing. The teachers tell me the same thing. They're not allowed to use cursive, only print. And I said, because when I do closings as a real estate attorney, you know, there's a line that says do your signature, and underneath it, it says print. And I've had many teachers say, yeah, I wonder what our kids are going to do when they don't know the difference.
This is the lack of vision in teaching.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's just another absurdity of our education. Now, I'm a licensed teacher in the state of California. So for all of you who are listening, there are teachers are getting upset with me. I've got every right to say what I'm doing because I am a teacher. I've made my life that way. I've made my living that way on a private basis, not in an educational system. Wow. So that's the deal. And everything I say, I'm absolutely passionate about because it's worked for me. Here's for any parent or any teacher to drag their children down with them and dummy them down is irrefutably unconscionable in my mind. Your job is to make them whole, to make them better than you, to make them stronger than you, to make them more educated than you, to give them every opportunity to be the best that they can be. And if somebody's feelings get hurt because somebody is succeeding, you know, so what? That's life. Let that person, only the highest can help the lowest. So let the person who's achieving lift up those other people, and don't penalize the achiever just because somebody else has hurt feelings because they're being left out. Make them own up, make them get better. That's what parenting, true parenting in my mind, is all about, as well as good teaching.
I agree. So, now the last chapter, because we just have just a few more minutes, is don't rush in. And I'll tell you what my briefly what I would say is, every time, it is so easy, especially for moms now. I don't know, I can't speak as a dad, but so many times when our children fail or our children have something happen, we want to rush in. I had a situation where there was an upset, a little bit of a drama between some kids, and I just said, you know, how do you think you can get in there and resolve this? Because you're the strong one, you're the leader. Why don't you go in there and make this better instead of just having the upset? And I said, how could you resolve that? And I left it alone, and found out about, oh, I don't know, 2-3 hours later, what she had done to resolve it, and it got all resolved. So it was,
okay,
a good thing. But talk to us about that.
Okay. Can you still hear me?
Yeah, we just have a few minutes.
Okay. So, yeah. Okay. So this starts, as all parenting does, when children are very young. When a child is learning to walk, for example, and it gets on its knees, and then it gets up, it's on both feet, and then it falls down, I would never rush to that child. Now, if there were a broken arm or something, yes. But the deal is, life is full of bumps and bruises and failures. In fact, one of the things I teach is that the road to success is paved with failure, our own failure. We fail, you fix it, and you move on. That's life. If a child falls down, let the child figure it out himself. Let him find out how to get up. Now, you can. That's exactly what you need to do. My own daughters, I would tell them, if we're going out when they were younger, you girls need to put on a coat. It's going to get cool. I'm not giving you my coat if it gets cold, because I'm telling you right now, it's your life, it's your responsibility, and you need to make the right choice. But sometimes they would say, no, Dad, I'm fine. And then we would get to wherever they are, and they get cold, right? So did I take off my coat? No, because a little discomfort to them now is going to teach them that there's not going to be somebody there to bail them out every time they make a mistake. And rushing in and always solving the children's problems for them is going to cripple them. It's not going to show them how to solve that problem. Once again, going back to that young lady at Yale who was upset because of a costume offending her. She doesn't know how to deal with life. A costume? Her parents probably rushed in and solved every problem for her in the world. She's an adult, and she can't solve that herself. And you could go on YouTube and check it out. She was screaming obscenities at some professor, saying he was shameful because, yeah, oh yeah, it was a horrible, shameful display of a college.
Wow.
But that's happening more often than not. So don't rush in. Let your children figure it out themselves. For example, if I have, in my fighting experience with teaching, I would tell people, if you get hit, it's your fault, because that your opponent's job is to hit you. You must learn to block and parry and to move. And if they would get hit, I wouldn't rush in. I would just let them figure it out. Now, if it were serious, yes, of course. But not everything in life is serious. Falling down and getting a bump or a bruise is not serious. You can guide them, you can teach them, but the word is, especially for me, is if we want to make our kids competent and confident, they have to learn to do for themselves. They cannot be that way and learn that if we are always rushing in and solving their problems for them.
Amen. Well, I want to thank you, Richard Andrew King, for your parenting wisdom in the 21st century. And the reason why I mention that is because numerology, as well as knowledge, is key to, and you know, you do my charts and you do my daughter's charts. So I just want to remind everyone to go to Amazon.com to get parenting wisdom and parenting wisdom in the 21st century. And you can also go to www.richardking.net to actually order the book online, I suppose, correct?
You can do it both. And if I can just tell people that parenting wisdom for the 21st century is the numerological aspects. This tells you how to create a basic matrix for your child or children, so you would know what they most desire in life, what their role is going to be, where their strengths, their weaknesses are. All that is laid out. Now, in later this year, I will be publishing KBN 7, which will be a composition of both Parenting Wisdom 1 and 2. So you'll have both in the same book, and that will be coming out sometime in the summertime. But also that's the difference in the two books. Parenting Wisdom, What to Teach the Children, is all about principles of life. Parenting Wisdom for the 21st Century is how to construct their numerology charts so they understand their children at a deep level.
That's very true.
And I will apologize for being too passionate today, but we're hitting on things that I'm absolutely adamant about, and I see it happening, and it's bothersome because I see things being done, I believe, incorrectly that are crippling this country and crippling children. And my whole purpose in life is to make them strong and balanced and competent as adults, not to just make them feel pampered, because they'll appreciate that as they get older.
I understand, and it's true. Thank you so very much for being a special guest. You will be back again April 3rd for the third segment of the 5-week program, and I'm excited about that. Until then, wishing everyone a blessed night, and be back next Sunday at 4 o'clock Pacific, 7 o'clock Eastern, living your soul's journey. Good night.